Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, whenever and wherever you are listening. We got Bob Zimmerman here again today in place of Frank Duncan signing on. Hopefully we can get Frank back here soon.
Apparently being a dad is important.
Yes, so. It is. He's got a valid excuse to not be here. Got Zach McLeod with us as always, and my man Will Stevens doing all the stuff that makes this thing go.
Yep.
And Zach, you want to introduce Robbie since you got his bio there with you?
Yeah, for sure. And we got Robbie Glendinning here. Played with Frank down in Mexico last year. He lives in the area. His wife's from here. Met her at the University of Missouri, correct?
Yep.
Played some JUCO ball. He's from Australia. Kind of a staple on Team Australia the last, it was like 9 years, 10 years. Yep. So talk a little international baseball and kind of baseball outside the United States. Our first guy that's not been from here. So.
Hitter.
And our first hitters. Congratulations.
Let's go.
Let's go.
Start turning the tide.
We're going to have some more guys on. Monte Harrison said he's going to come on at some point, which hopefully they'll be good this summer because he'll be done playing football. It's an interesting story. And Caleb and Alante, I'm sure, will come on at some point as well. But yeah, Robbie, why don't we just start off? Tell us a little bit about yourself. Growing up in Australia, obviously baseball is not the number one sport there.
Yeah.
So maybe talk about kind of the popular activities, sports that are over there that you grew up playing, and then kind of how you transitioned over full-time baseball.
Yeah, so in Australia, the biggest sports are Australian rules football, cricket.
And is that, sorry to interrupt you, is that rugby?
No. So it's a separate sport.
Okay.
Called Australian Rules Football. AFL is the league over there. And rugby's obviously pretty big as well. I ended up getting into baseball. My dad owned a car rental company and he rented cars to the Perth Heat, which is the Australian Baseball League team there. And from there, he kind of fell in love. He employed some of the players. And then I have an older brother who was a pitcher at University of New Orleans. So he kind of did it before me, went to college and that. And I kind of just followed in his footsteps, and we love baseball ever since we were young.
Yeah, and I know you don't want to brag too much, but your grandpa?
So this
is pretty cool.
The Glendinning name in Australian rules football is like a really big name. The Ross Glendinning Medal is awarded to the best player of the Western Derby, which is like Fremantle versus West Coast Eagles. And so Glendinning name in football is a huge name. And so when I, you know, went to baseball full time, it was not a big deal, but it was talked about a little bit from where I'm from. So yeah, we have a lot of my uncles played professionally. And so I think that's where I get my.
I'm guessing with your size that you'd have no problem playing.
Yeah.
Well, I did play growing up and then kids hit puberty before me. It's a physical sport. Yeah, I stuck to baseball.
That's awesome. And so I coached a guy that was from Australia in junior college in the 4 year I was at for a year. And some things I didn't know is like your guys' school is obviously the seasons are opposite. So like getting into college, maybe you can talk about the recruiting because you have to wait kind of a semester, right?
Yeah, so you can choose to go. We graduate high school a year earlier. So I graduated high school in 2012 and then had kind of a gap year before I was in line with the American kids to be that age. You can go earlier, but usually Australian kids are very undersized and not ready for college baseball. So yeah, I took a gap year, worked, saved some money, and
Yeah, and so JUCO guy, we've had a lot of JUCO guys actually on here. Sorry,
I've
go
got
ahead.
A question, Robbie. Sorry, is there like a college baseball system in Australia?
No, there's not. So baseball is played. It's not even in high schools. It's played in like club baseball.
So there's no school affiliated.
No school affiliated. We have what got me into college over here. There's an American guy named Steve Fish, and he came out to Australia, loved it so much, came back and coached there. And that happens with a lot of Americans. They might find an Australian wife or something. And that's how baseball's kind of grown. Steve Fish had contacts within America at junior college. Travis Hergett was my junior college coach, who's now, I think he's with the Phillies pitching coordinator. And so he knew him, and it's all kind of just word of mouth. That's why a lot of us before nowadays with like Travis Bizarre and all those kids, a lot of us went to junior college first because
that makes a lot of sense.
It's hard for a Division I school to recruit a kid from Australia when they've never seen him. No track records.
And I'm assuming too, like a knock earlier, we'll talk more as we go, like how much baseball's kind of grown there. Guys like yourself and Travis Bizana, I know you have a friendship with like Peter Moylan and stuff like that. So like bigger names, the winter league there is getting bigger with Americans coming over and playing. And so it's growing. But I'm assuming like when you were getting recruited and what was that like 20, you know, a lot of coaches are probably like, we don't even know what the competition is over there. Like we don't know how this is going to work. And so junior college is probably the perfect spot where it's like, hey, this guy's athletic, swing looks pretty good, let's just bring him over here and see what happens. So maybe you can kind of talk about like coming over to the States and playing some JUCO. Was it like more advanced than you were used to? Was it about the same? Like kind of where was it?
So let's get back to, so Australia is treated as an international. So it's like the Dominican, right? The really good kids sign professionally when they're 16.
Okay.
So there are major league scouts. And there's programs like, not to the extent of the Dominican, we don't have facilities, but we would run like a major league baseball academy where for 8 weeks we would all go out and play and train and scouts would come. So really good kids would sign when they're 16. Liam Hendricks signed when he was 16. He was a starter. Yeah. Curtis Meade signed when he was younger. So like kids can either go the professional route or the college route. When I was that age, no one really had success doing it. Josh Spence is the name. I'm not sure. He pitched at Arizona State. He was successful in it, but the college was usually kind of a road to dead end. And I saw that with my brother. He did really well. He went to the University of New Orleans, but no one had really made it out from college yet. So it was kind of like an unknown thing. I wasn't good enough when I was 16. I was still really small. I hadn't grown into my body. So yeah, that's how that works.
Yeah. And so culturally, like you were saying, like a lot of the Australians take that gap year because of the physicality. Is that something that's kind of started to become more part of the culture there? Like the lifting side, the strength side, like getting guys ready to go right away that you're seeing with this, I guess, like newer generation?
Yeah, I think it comes into coaching and guys that have played over here and can now help the college kids. The internet has really helped, like social media. But in terms of a culture point of view, you guys have high school football. You guys, kids are lifting since like sophomore year, freshman year of high school. In Australia, that's not really the case.
Okay.
So we were behind. I would say the biggest adjustment for me was physically. Coming to junior college, I was technically really good. We practice a lot, but I grew up playing 25 to 30 games a season.
Yeah.
So like I was behind in gameplay, diving for ball. Like I wasn't good at that compared to an American kid.
Yeah.
And then just physically.
So like reps basically.
Reps,
just didn't have a ton of game reps.
Yeah. Like I could hit BP, I could field ground balls, but in terms of like knowing how to hustle, making diving plays, I wasn't game ready.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so Frank kind of talks about that. He stole it from, I can't remember who, another guy, but we talked a lot the first few episodes of like being an indoor cat versus an outdoor cat. So like the indoor cats are the guys that come in here, throw 100 miles an hour, they get in the game, can't throw strikes, can't get an out. Same with hitters. You see guys, you know, there's the term like 5 o'clock hitter. Mm-hmm. Looks great in BP, gets in the game, has no idea what's going on. And so you can even see that in the States based on like where we're at. You know, you're in the Midwest and you get hitters and they're playing, I don't know, a summer, 50 games a year, maybe the fall they're playing another 15, 65. You go to California, Florida, you know, anywhere in the South where it's warm 24/7, they're playing over 100 games a year. Yeah. And so it's like, it's a huge advantage. So I can only imagine like with the resources being limited in Australia where it's like, well, we can just practice.
Yeah.
We can't really like play a lot. And then you get to JUCO and that JUCO fall schedule is a beast. And so you guys are playing and scrimmaging 4 times a week usually.
Yeah.
So do you feel like that just helped a ton? And did you feel like you were swimming at the beginning and then as the fall went along, you kind of were figuring it out?
Yeah. 100%. I got to junior college and the workload and, like I said, the physicality of players. I was way back. I think I showed up to junior college like 155 pounds. And so I
and
was
you're like 6'2"?
I was 6'1", 6'2". Okay. So I was just a string bean, underdeveloped, but I could, you know, I was a pretty good player still. So a lot of my junior college was just trying to bulk up as much, lots of late night dominoes and, you know, like a junior college kid does.
Yeah, yeah.
And I went to NIAC, which I give a lot of credit to my coaches there. I think I would have had a career for sure.
Yeah, and give them a shout out, because I know one day when we were hitting in the cage, I kind of asked you, like, who are the guys that really impacted you in your career? And that's the first people you mentioned. You're like, they're all coordinators or something in pro ball now. And so you just felt like you got a really good education really early on in your career. Yeah. So
we had a really good couple of years at NIAC. It was when Driveline had first, not started, but it was first becoming mainstream. And then the whole uphill versus downhill hitting, the Twitter hitting was like, it was 2014. It was first Josh Donaldson was having a really good year. That was kind of the groundbreaking for it. So Travis Hergett was my head coach who has been with the Phillies ever since. I think he's the pitching coordinator. He's high up there. Pete Lauritsen was my hitting coach, who was the Cleveland Indians hitting coordinator. He's now back at Kirkwood as a hitting coach.
Oh, that's awesome.
And then Sean Schlechter was the assistant coach, who's the AAA hitting coach for the Twins now. So, like, they all kind of, we had really good years. They took advantage and went to professional baseball, which is great.
Yeah, that's awesome. Yeah. So, but yeah, so I think, obviously, we can bring up your numbers because your JUCO numbers are pretty crazy. Hitting 25 home runs, hitting 360. I mean, you only played 62 games, had 87 RBIs. And so...
Wait, was that your freshman year you did?
No, sophomore year.
Sophomore year.
Okay. My freshman year, I think I hit over 400. I had a really good year. And I committed to Kansas State for my sophomore year. And I was planning to go to Kansas State. I had enrolled everything. And then my high school grades from Australia did not transfer to NCAA. So I had to get my AA degree. Not that I was mucking around in school. It's just Australian education was so different to the United States. So
Yeah,
I was playing in Dodge City in the Jayhawk League and was going to go to Kansas State in the fall. Didn't end up, came back to NIAC and then went to Missouri.
So yeah, those are crazy numbers. And just for people to understand, like, it's cold in Kansas and Missouri in the fall. In the beginning of the spring. It is super cold in Iowa. So those power numbers are impressive because, I mean, you're probably playing a lot of games in 40-degree weather in February, you know, like when the college season starts is February.
Can't feel your hands.
Yeah. So I'm sure it was just as fun to pitch in.
I remember we would come down to Kansas City for our spring trip.
All right.
We would always go to Texas. Yeah. Texas and Arizona.
We were always so excited to come down. We're going to fly. Yeah. 50 degrees felt like.
So, here's one thing I wanted to ask. Like, you're going from Australia, which I've never been there, but you just see the photos of it.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden it's gorgeous. And then you come to Iowa. What were your first?
So I remember I came over with my best friend, Troy Bullingham. He played at NIAC with me, went to Creighton afterwards. But he was my best friend growing up. And I remember the first day we showed up in Iowa, they showed us our dorm room. And they had kind of been like, didn't tell us all the details. And we showed up and we were like, what are we doing here? And then when it started to get cold in Mason City, Iowa, which is where NIAC is, I'd never seen snow before.
So, like, were you prepped? Did you have a coat? Or?
Yeah, I had a coat. People had warned us, and then obviously people had come before us. NIAC was quite known for bringing Australians in, but yeah, it was a shock to the system for sure.
Yeah, I coached a lot of Latin guys. I played with a bunch of guys from Arizona and California. And in the fall, you know, the first day to get down in the 40s, I'm like, hey, are we going to practice today? I'm like, yes.
Yeah.
And this is going to be one of the better days for the next month. So I can only imagine you're going to Australia and how cold does it get in the winter?
Australia climate's really similar to California. So,
okay. So like 70.
Yeah, it gets 60 and rainy.
So you probably got here the first, you know, it's January when you're reporting back and there's like a foot of snow and it's 20 degrees. You're like, what is happening?
Yeah. Right now? Luckily we had a really good indoor facility, which you learn to use.
Yeah.
Yeah. The winters were great for my development because you stay inside and you lift and you don't play, which is good in an essence, but yeah, it was a lot different. It was a different world.
Yeah. And that's the perk of being in junior college. Like whenever kids talk about like going to this and that, I'm like, hey, when you go to JUCO, it's going to be in a small town. You're there for one reason, to get better at baseball. So like you got to look at it as an investment. You're not going there. It's not your destination. It's the pit stop. So you need to go there. You need to focus on what your job is, which is to get better. And then you can commit to a school like K-State or eventually, like you said, going to Mizzou. That's the entire goal.
A junior college for me was great. Obviously it came with its negatives, you know, like, as you said, I put up pretty good numbers in the scouts. There's always doubts or, you know, junior college Iowa pitching isn't the toughest, so like you do have to combat that. No matter how good you do, there's always going to be a negative because you're in junior college. But I feel like in terms of development, you really do get the time to like focus on baseball compared to a bigger school.
And then compared to like if you were to go to K-State right away or Mizzou or end up or any other big Division I school, it's like, you know, like you said, you didn't have a ton of game reps, and it's like you get in the fall, you know, you might have been over your skis a little bit that first, you know, semester, I'm sure. And then it's like, well, that coaching staff kind of has a decision made on you and you're allowed to get those reps and kind of like, you know, work through it without the stakes being as high and get that development. And then you roll right into Mizzou and I'm sure you're just like, totally fine. Everything's good to go. You're up to speed.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think what age do kids go to junior college? 18. See, a lot of, I wasn't grown by 18 years old, you know, like there's a lot of late developers that at 18, 19 aren't as good, but by 23, they're much better players or strong. And so it's just a chance for me to continue to grow and develop.
That's awesome. So, Bob, you got any other JUCO questions before we go on to Mizzou here?
I mean, I think it's just a great point, and I know we've touched on it before, that like those extra years of development are huge for players. Yeah. So many guys think they're ready, but they need more, and it's just another great example of a guy that uses opportunity at the junior college level to really like jumpstart his career.
I mean, Bob Means talked about this. Like, you look at big league rosters, professional rosters, it's a bunch of JUCO guys, and it's because it's hard to get better at baseball if you don't play baseball.
Correct.
So, you know,
go to SEC aren't playing that first year.
Yeah, I mean, you have to look at the – it's like the innings that freshmen get are so minimal on the mound. It's so minimal in the, you know, in the field because that coach has to win the game. And just because, like, you know, Johnny throws 90 miles an hour doesn't necessarily mean he's the best option to win the game that day. Sure. He may have the most potential, the most professional potential, but – it's like that coach can't, you know, do that because if they only win 20 games that year, he might be gone, and then it doesn't matter.
Yeah, and I will say there's definitely positives and negatives to both, right? Like, I played with kids at Missouri that were there from a freshman year, and they kind of got their feet wet, maybe sat on the bench for a year, and by their junior year, they were better prepared than I was coming from junior college to...
Because they were in the system.
Yeah, because they're familiar with the staff, familiar with everything around, have kind of got their routine down for 2 years before they have to really produce as a junior. So I tell kids, like, it's all an individual...
Yeah.
An individual thing. I didn't have the option to go to Division I out of high school.
Yeah.
So, like, you got to pick the right coaches is what it comes down to. It's finding coaches that you trust and will have the best interest for you.
Yeah, it sounds like you got, you know, super lucky with the coaching staff you got, just how you've talked about them and obviously the resume since then. Mm. But you kind of touched on it, Dodge City, going there, find out, I can't go to K-State. So you decided to, you know, flip K-State to Mizzou. Maybe you can talk about, you know, what made you make that choice and then kind of you only spent 1 year at Mizzou before you got drafted. So kind of like your experience there.
Yeah, it was really cool because I committed to K-State really early my freshman year and I didn't really get to experience recruiting. So when I opened that back up and I was now a kid with a bit of like, I think I won the league MVP in the Jayhawk League or I was on the All-Star team. So I had a bit of like...
like a track record.
Like, a bit of hype. Yeah.
Yeah.
And so it was cool to get attention, go on visits, experience that. Like I had pretty much every school you could think of, which was cool. But to me, when I visited Missouri, they had Ryan Howard was a shortstop at Missouri, his junior year, and he was going to be a high draft pick. And so I had the shortstop job. Like it was mine. And that to me was valuable that I could come in. I would know I would play shortstop every day. As a junior, like that's in the SEC.
Yeah.
Right. So like to me, I didn't really care about anything else other than that.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
That's cool. And then who are the coaches back then in the zoo?
So well what was tricky was after my second year in junior college, I went to the Cape and I played on the Cape as a junior college kid, which is pretty rare. Back then it was rare.
Yeah.
And
it still is.
Yeah, yeah. When that happened, the draft was going on. I thought I was gonna maybe go get play pro ball, not even get to Missouri. But then they fired the coaches that I committed to, and they brought in Coach Beezer and that stuff. So I was kind of in the middle of committed to coaches, went to new coaches, still stuck with them. But that was the coaching situation.
And how was that walking in? Was it kind of nerve-wracking? Like, hey, we got different coaching staff than I committed to. Like,
yeah, it was really nerve-wracking, and I did. I lost my way because I played in the Cape and then went. I had to do like a course of summer schools. But you get to Missouri, Columbia is a massive college town. Like, not massive.
Compared to
Nyack. Yeah. And, you know, there's girls all around, there's distractions. And like, I didn't do a good job of handling it at first. Yeah. But then you get, you're super nervous. You go to a couple football games, and then it sets in. It's like, all right, baseball is.
Sure. And then so maybe if you want to touch on a little bit, like those JUCO numbers, obviously you were getting draft calls. So like kind of what made you decide I'm going to choose to go to Missouri instead of that? And like what made you decide to do that? And would you have done it a different way, basically?
Yeah. So I really wanted to be a top couple rounder like every other kid does. I felt like out of junior college, there were definitely doubts of, you know, I'm not going to go in the first or second round at a junior college in Iowa.
Yeah.
Like whatever my numbers were. That was just a risk they weren't going to take. I was getting calls from like the fourth to seventh round of like considerable money. And my agent at the time probably I think he was kind of in cahoots with the Missouri coaching staff.
No, that doesn't.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's never happened before.
I think he probably set my number a little too high, and it didn't get to that. So I went to Missouri. Looking back on it, now that I know how valuable age is and professional baseball, like, I could have gone a different route, but everything worked out. And yeah, so the junior college thing, getting drafted, being on the Cape. Like, I remember I was on a team with, my team was stacked. We had Casey Myers, who was the number one pick.
Yep.
We had Joey Bart, who I think was the number two pick.
And he's the Pirates catcher right now?
Yeah. So there were a bunch of guys that were, I remember we were playing a game, we were going back and checking our phones to see if we got drafted. And that's kind of how the whole Cape is. And I did, and I was getting some calls. My agent was getting some calls, but didn't come to agreement with any. Didn't get drafted, so I was like, all right, I'll go to Missouri. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of how that worked.
And how was the play, like, that spring in Missouri? Do you feel like, I know, like, going and playing pro ball maybe would have been, like, really cool after that. Do you feel like the experience of, like, SEC pitching helped you make that transition to minor league baseball? Because obviously, like, the stuff is going to be ticked up compared to, like, junior college. Like, junior college, you run into really good arms. Like, mm-hmm. you'll see a guy that's, like, 94, 95 with a good slider. And then, you know, the next game, it's, like, a lefty that's, like, 83 and a bunch of outs. And so the variance in pitching quality is, like, very high. And so compared to the SEC, do you feel like that kind of helped?
Yeah, I think the fall at Missouri really helped. Tanner Houck was on my team. Bryce Montes Diogo, who I think,
yeah,
is he from?
Yeah, he's from around here.
He's from,
yeah. So we were facing, like, really good draft guys in the fall, and I think that shook me a little bit, because not that I did bad against them, but I wasn't competing against them in a dominant fashion like I had been on the pitches. Like, it was kind of an even playing field, and that prepared me. And then when you're in these, like, bigger schools, power conference schools, you go to Florida and you play all these kind of mid-major schools, and generally you dominate them pretty good.
Yeah.
And I cruised through that. I think I was hitting like 420. SEC play started, and we had Brady Singer, Fiedo, AJ Park, and was AJ Puck, maybe it was another Jackson Coa. And I remember facing Florida, and I didn't get a hit the hole. And I think I went like 2 for 50 once SEC play started. And that was a wake up call to me. It's like, okay, I've got to really get better, because this is a different type of baseball.
Yeah.
You know,
that's awesome.
And I feel like a lot of junior college kids or high school kids, SEC is no walkover. You know, like, it's real baseball.
Yeah. Every day you're facing somebody. So if you have a bad day, like, you're going to get exposed quickly.
Well, I mean, I feel like the jump, just like from high school to to SEC, it's just so huge.
Yeah.
And even like from JUCO to SEC is huge.
Especially for a hitter. Like, pitchers, you guys have the technology and stuff now. Like, you can kind of tell if your stuff's going to play.
Right.
Like, if you're 98 out of high school and you're a freshman, it
should be okay. Yeah, it's
matter. Yeah.
You throw it in the zone.
But like, as a hitter, facing that quality of pitching, it's going to take some time to produce. And that's why you look at really high picks out of college, Bregman, Dansby Swanson, all those guys that have kind of spent 3 years there. It takes freshman year, sophomore year, and junior year to really put together a good body of work. It takes our best.
And it's just like, you know, high school hitters, especially with it being 20 rounds now, you just don't see as many of them get taken. And it's honestly like, I've talked to guys around here that have gotten drafted in high school, like, hey, you know, you're seeing 84, 85 most days. You know, obviously you're running some high school kids. You're like, oh, I throw 90. Yeah, I know. Like, but the average kid, you know, average, seeing 84, 85, you get dropped in the Arizona League or the GCL, and you're seeing 95 every day.
Yeah.
And so, like, it was like you were saying with those mid-majors, like, yo, I'm dominating them. And then you see, like, these three guys are, like, established big league, like, legitimate big league arms at that age. And you're like, wow, like, that's different. But, you know, you're seeing that every day instead of, you know, once every month.
Right.
You know, and then in high school, it's like you might see, like, 90 nowadays, like, once a week, something like that. But now you're seeing 95 every single day.
Well, there's definitely good pitchers in high school, I'm not saying.
For sure.
Good hitters are going to get their hits against guys throwing 84, 86.
Yeah.
And it's like, you know, you could face your stud on a high school game one Friday night, and you can go 0-for-2 with a couple ground outs, and then you're going to get a guy where you can get your 2-for-4.
Yeah.
The SEC, it's like the 7th to 9th inning, or especially in professional baseball, 7th to 9th inning, they're tough at bats. So, like, so you need to get your hits against the starter. So, like, that's where that's the difference was. In junior college, I could get my hits against, they might have a good starter, but I'd get my hits against second, third game relievers. Once I got to a big school, that wasn't the thing.
Yeah, you're like competing against their ace, and then you're picking up all your numbers, games 2, 3, and 4.
Right.
Whereas in the SEC, it's like it's just your face and everybody's, you know, JUCO ace or high school ace every single day, every single pitch. So
100%, and that goes back to like the reps.
Yeah.
And then as you progress and see that more often, you start to adapt to it.
Yeah. So how long do you think it took you to kind of make that adjustment? Like after you saw those guys, you're like, wow, like I gotta figure some stuff out. What do you think the biggest change was during that year? And when did you feel like you're like, okay, now I feel like I definitely belong?
I didn't really play that well at Missouri. I think I hit 270. Yeah. And that was largely due to a strong start. I hit 270 and in the draft, I fell to the 21st round or something. And then my first year of professional baseball, I hit 190. So it took till that off season to really like, okay, I need to change my training, do this. And then that's when the success started to come. So I really didn't dominate college baseball. Kids did. Like I got drafted based on my tools, my body, what I did in junior college.
So like you said, you kind of had that first off season. What was like the biggest takeaway? Like, okay, if I'm going to be successful and do this at, you know, for a long term, what are you, 29 now? So you've been doing this for a long time. Like, what do you think that first big adjustment was to kind of get you to start dominating that high level pitching?
Yeah, I went back to Iowa in that offseason, and I hit with my junior college hitting coach. And then I was fortunate enough to go to Australia and play in the offseason. And I think playing against men with a wood bat, like in an offseason, really helped me. I think that when I tend to struggle, search for contact. And as a hitter, that's like the worst thing to do, and you get really pushy. And so I think that off season, I remember just really trying to trust my movements, get stronger. And then I came back to Pittsburgh spring training and kind of started to take off a little bit.
Awesome. And maybe you can talk a little bit, because you've kind of been a staple over in Australia in that winter league, and like how important that has been for your just development and all that in your career.
Yeah, we take a lot of pride in the Australian league. The Australians, we always try to come back and play. It doesn't always work out that way. Like my Curtis Mead, for example, the Rays don't let him play. But we try to, as professionals, come back and play. And the MLB has helped that. They used to fund the league. And then every team usually has an agreement with an organization where an organization will send players out. But it's just like we were talking about earlier, extra at-bats in good weather, extra reps. And I think it gave me a lot of confidence going back, because playing against men, I mean, but I'm sure you know, like against men, it's a different beast than anything else. And once you can trust yourself playing at that level, then you get confidence.
Yeah, because I know that, you know, for America, right, we have the MLB here. So a lot of people kind of look at that like it's the biggest thing. And then you talk to other countries, like I know the Puerto Rican Winter League, I've coached that are, you know, Puerto Ricans, and it's like a huge deal. I understand the Dominican, same thing in the Venezuelan Winter League, same thing in the Australian Winter League. It's like the thing at the time, because it's like the highest level of baseball they get. And so, you know, what's the environment like in those games? Is it like a pretty good
opinion? Not necessarily in Australia, no. It's quite laid back, and I think that's what people like, especially Americans. They can come, they can speak English, the culture's the same. The games definitely do mean something, but it's not like crazy Latin.
Yeah.
Which is good, but the quality's still good. And I remember I did well, and I got picked for my first team Australia, and I went to Japan for a couple games, and we played against the Japanese national team in front of like 60,000 people. And that was when I remember my confidence really took off, because we faced Imanaga, was still young. I faced Imanaga and I faced Kodai Senga. And I think I got a couple hits in my first game. And I remember I went straight from there to spring training on the backfields. And I'm like, if I can play in front of 60,000 people, I'm okay. Like, that's where I was drawing my confidence from.
That's awesome.
So, where international baseball really helped me.
Yeah. I mean, that next year you made a huge change. I mean, you hit, 250 in low A and then 280 in high A, and you basically split your time that year, and so they kind of progressed you.
Short season on low A maybe, yeah.
Yeah, and so it looks like you had a lot better, numbers there from your adjustments and all that, and, maybe talk a little bit more about, like, Team Australia, and like, does that happen every off season? Like, do you go back and play games with them every off season, or is it like?
No, not generally every off season. The two big tournaments are Premier 12, which it just happened, and then the World Baseball Classic. Mm-hmm. This was just an exhibition series for Team Japan, but the Japanese baseball fans are crazy. So we went over there. It was like a 2-game exhibition series, but it really boosted my confidence because playing in front of that many people when you can't really feel your legs when you hit it, that helped me a lot.
That's awesome. And then Bob, you played for Team USA for a couple of years, right?
Major Team USA, yep.
And so I never asked because I don't really know a ton about that, but like, did you guys travel or where did you guys go to for that?
Yeah, so we went to Japan, Italy, Netherlands, and then we did a lot too, just like against like the Cape Cod All-Stars, Alaskan All-Stars, different things like that. But yeah, we played a 7-game series over in Japan. I don't think we had 60,000, but it was probably 30,000 plus for like their collegiate level national team, not even their like big dog national team. And it was nuts. I mean, they all had the banging sticks. Yeah, it was definitely a different environment at the time than I'd ever been a part of. And it's...
How old were you when you did that?
19 and 20.
Okay, so you're in college. Did you feel like that also helped you when you came back?
100%. Like, yeah, you talk about like stressful environments. Like you said, you go to A ball and you're playing in front of 200 fans. And you're like, it's nothing.
Yeah, that's easy. I remember my first game. I was playing second base, and Luke Hughes was the first baseman. Luke Hughes is an Australian player, and growing up, he was from the same town as me, and he was like my hero. His first at-bat, he homered against Max Scherzer in the big leagues, and he's kind of known for that. But he was my hero growing up, and he was playing first base, and I remember trying to like talk to him, and I was yelling as loud as I could at second base, and he could not hear me at first base. And through the TV, it doesn't really like correlate how loud those stadiums are, but it is so, so loud. Yeah. And that was a great experience.
That's awesome.
Yeah, and I like forget where we played in the like Tokyo Dome.
Yeah.
Is that where you guys played too?
Yeah, we played there.
Because I think that dome just magnified.
Yeah, the World Baseball Classic there was cool, especially with Ohtani. I'll never forget, he hit a home run against us, and I was playing second base. And I felt like I could have jumped and fought this ball. And he hit it off his own face on the scoreboard. Like, you guys can get that home run up and watch it. It was – and the crowd – like, I've never seen anything so loud in my life. Like, the place was, like, literally shaking. It was
– yeah, because I asked him, like, when we first started working together, like, it's been close to a month now, but I was like, what was it? Is Ohtani – like, I know he's super popular in the States, obviously, but it's, like, a whole different, you know, ball game whenever he's, like, in the country that he's from. And baseball is the most popular sport in Japan. Whereas, like, in America, you know, it's, like, you know, football – is king of everything, and then probably basketball, and honestly college football, and then baseball. And I was like, you know, what's it like over there? Is he like LeBron? He's like, no, it's like Taylor Swift. Like the amount of fame. Yeah. Like it's like he's like the amount of fame that he has. Like, what'd you say? They couldn't even.
Yeah. So during the World Baseball Classic, all the teams stayed at the same hotel, Samurai Japan, and they had really big stars like Yu Darvish, Yamamoto. Guys like
Sasaki that just
this isn't confirmed, but I think it is confirmed. But Ohtani has to stay at an apartment with an underground tunnel to the Tokyo Dome, because if he was at the hotel, traffic for the whole city would shut down because there'd be so many people trying to get to the buses. So he has to stay separate from the team because of like how big of a deal he is,
which is insane
when you think about it, because like Yu Darvish, the guys I just mentioned, they're massive stars as well, can't go anywhere, and Ohtani is
like above
tenfold. Like literally cannot stay at the team hotels and has to walk underneath the tunnel to get to the Tokyo Dome.
Which he is insane. I'm still convinced he's probably the best baseball player that's ever played. Like what he can do on a baseball field is unmatched. It's ridiculous. We've talked a lot about jumps with different guys. And so you obviously talked about the jump from playing in high school to JUCO, and then JUCO to big SEC school, and then to pro ball. A lot of what I've noticed, and what a lot of the guys have talked about, and Bob as well, like there's a jump when it's like double A, like when you get to double A, you've been up to triple A and played there. And so what was that jump from like high A to double A? Where did you feel like, man, this is the big adjustment I had to make. Like, I feel like I could do this. Now I have to change.
I think the high A to double A jump is definitely like very significant. I think in terms of scouting reports, I had some success when I first got the double A. I think it was based on confidence, and I handled that pretty well. Second time when I started playing against teams, I really started to struggle because teams had a report on me. But then I also think, like, especially now, double A to triple A is a massive jump. Because, again, you're playing against men.
and you're playing against guys that have been like achieving their dream, supporting their families, and then they come down to AAA and they just absolutely dominate the level. And so like AA to AAA is where it becomes kind of real, like, wow, I'm really close here. This guy just disappeared from yesterday and now I'm watching him on TV. Yeah. And I think from a baseball standpoint, different fastballs are utilized in AAA. Cutters, sinkers. Like as a hitter, that's a really big jump, more so than any of the other levels. I feel like I got to AA being able to hit a fastball. And then AA, they kind of introduced cut and sink. AAA, they're throwing. A lot of pitchers have a lot of...
Yeah, the triangle fastball.
Right. Yeah. And you've got to be able to cover off speed. You've got to be able to cover cutters because it's not really many straight fastballs anymore. And I found that tough to deal with. Yeah, just being able to adjust in flight to different shapes and fastballs.
One of the minor league guys that came in over the winter, I was talking to him. He's like, yeah, there's no 90 mile an hour righties anymore. Like, that's just not a thing. He's like, you don't get... It's if they are 90, it's like a weird slot with a ton of run or a ton of cut or a ton of sink. He's like, there's no just like stock righty.
Yeah.
That's
and,
not.
And I personally struggle with guys that have two fastballs.
Yeah.
Like if a guy has a 20-inch rider and then he throws a sinker on your hands, like when you're trying to go against two fastballs, a slider and a changeup, like that's where I...
Hitting's already really freaking hard. I don't know if everybody understands this. I figured it out at a really early age, and I was like, I'm just not going to do it anymore. It's too hard.
Yeah. Bob said in a previous podcast, they'd be like, hey, we're going to do a bunting. He's like, hey, tweak my hamstring. I'm going to go get that taken care of.
So when I was playing, the pitcher still hit in the National League. Right. And so like they would set these machines up to like over 100 and put them like 40 feet away. And then they'd be like, bunting lines. Yeah. So like they'd make all the pitchers go and bunt. And so every time I'd get to the front of the line, I'd be like, oh, I got a pine tar on my bat. I'll be right back. Get into the back of the line, work my way all the way back up, come up with something else. Yeah. I don't think I bunted once off those machines. I was screw that.
Because I always give Frank trouble because he's like, he'll talk about it. He's like, I just have a better approach. I'm like, dude, it's like 100 with Ryan, and then they're throwing a 95 mile an hour sinker. Like watching Riley this winter, it's like he's throwing a cutter and a sinker at 94, and then he throws fastball like 100. It's like, okay, good luck, guys. Go hit that and figure out which one you want to hit. So it's just tough.
And I think everyone's response to the jump in Pro Bowl is different. AA is when it starts to get like real baseball. You know, like the club just look after you. You got a tip. They clean your cleats every day. Like that's when it really starts. But yeah, for me, my biggest struggle, well, I got traded to Baltimore. So my biggest struggle was that first month in Baltimore because I was trying to do too much, and then my team was loaded. Will Falk ended up winning, but you see guys come down and just absolutely dominate, and then you're there treading water, and it's like, or a pitcher gets sent down, and he dominates you. It's like, this guy just got sent down. He's got a 10 in the big leagues, and he's dominating me. Like, what chance do I have?
Or their rehab start. He's going to make one rehab start, AA, and goes 7 no-hits. Yeah. Nobody's got a shot.
Right.
Couldn't I have had that day off?
I know you've talked about that Baltimore team a little bit. Like you said, Colton Cowser was on there. Who are some of the other guys that are pretty like prominent,
Colton Cowser, Jordan Westberg, Joey Ortiz, Heston Kerstad.
So the entire
Connor Norby.
The entire Baltimore team right now.
So I was looking at it the other day with my wife because I was like, I really got traded to the worst situation possible. But two of the guys were already All-Stars, Westberg and was Grayson Rodriguez an All-Star last year?
I think so.
So there was already two All-Stars from my AAA team, and Baltimore had like the best system. So I got thrown right in, and it was cool to play with them and see just how good they were.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, like looking at your AA, like your first year there, you hit 260 with 5 home runs, 58 games. So like you did fine. Like you did a good job. And then your second year, you were with Kansas City, so you went from Pittsburgh to Kansas City. Me and you talk all the time, but like that was like the year that we're, I don't want to say like recreating because you're a different player, but it's the year that it's like, can we copy those numbers basically? Right. Hitting 250, your OPS is over 800, you got 19 pumps, 21 doubles. And you said a lot of that at the end, like you had hurt your hand. So you're just kind of like treading water that last month and the numbers were kind of going down and stabilizing. Yeah. So you're like, that was by far the best year I've ever played, the best year I've ever felt. And you kind of went on a journey, and maybe you can talk about this because you're like, the big knock was like, hey, you're striking out too much, which, probably was true from like a percentage point, but you decided like, hey, I'm going to try to eliminate that. And then you've talked about how like, I felt like I took away what made me good.
Yeah.
So maybe you can kind of talk about that, because that's something players, I was just talking to one of my college guys, same thing. It's like, hey, I want to cut my stride. I was like, hey, like, you're having a great year. Like, what if we just chill, let the season go, and then we can attack it, you know, when you're done playing this year. And so talk a little bit like, yeah, attacking your weaknesses are good, but you never want to take away from what makes you who you are.
Yeah. So that year in Double A, I played primarily first base, which I didn't like because I was a shortstop coming up. And Michael Garcia was on the team, so he was playing shortstop. And Massey was at second.
Who's playing third?
Jake Means and Nate Eaton played third most of the time. So
good, John's brother, right?
Yeah, John Means. So
that's cool.
Yeah,
small world.
So I played first, and I really didn't like that. And so I went into the offseason. I wanted to lose some weight, get in shape, so I could show defensive versatility, because that's a big thing right now, being able to play everywhere. But in the meantime, I felt like I lost some horsepower, which is what we've talked about. Like, sure, I was skinnier, but I probably did it the wrong way, and I think I lost a bit of my juice. I was having to cheat to hit for power, which was leaving big holes in my swing and my approach. And the next year, I still had a decent year, but it wasn't as powerful, and the strikeouts were still the same. So I've like spent the whole offseason trying to not strike out. And I feel like when you start searching for contact or thinking about strikeouts, that's when they keep happening. So the strength that was keeping me in the game of hitting for power had kind of dwindled, but my weakness was still there. So I was like, that doesn't make much sense. So we've been working on this offseason, is getting that horsepower, that top speed back, where I can hit balls hard without having to cheat. Put back on some good weight, and not really care about the defensive versatility, because what's going to get me back into professional baseball or around is my offensive power. So let's just keep buying that strength.
Yeah, and I think there's a comp. Bob, maybe you can talk about pitching, because I think the comp that I always make is like when pitchers are wild and they walk guys, are like, just throw strikes. And then people that strike out, they're like, just make contact. And I'm like, well,
it's obviously.
Hey,
it's slow down and throw strikes. And it's like, that's the stupidest thing you could have ever said.
Yeah.
You know, it's like it takes away from what they do. They start moving less efficiently and like they start getting itches, different things. And it's like, well, let's address it from a different way, where we're still like nurturing your strength. We're just trying to hone in a little.
Yeah.
Yeah. I feel like hearing that, it's like the exact same thing.
Yeah.
Why?
Make contact. Like, it's like, well, obviously, that's what we're, that's what's trying to happen.
You want to ground out to second now? Because that's better than freaking hitting a home run followed by a strikeout.
Like, yeah. It's all the same. And I think, you know, what are some of the adjustments you feel like you've made to kind of like go back to what made you who you are? Like, is it just like a less of like, hey, I'm just going to not focus on this? Because I think a lot of times with guys strike out, it's like they're fearing that outcome because they think people are looking at it. And like, to me and Bob talks about a lot, it's like guys that don't strike out just do their work before two strikes. That's really what happens. It's like when you get, and we've talked about this, when you get balls at the heart of the plate, it's like those are the ones that just end the at bat. Like whether it's a ground out, a fly out, a line out, a homer, a double, a single, it's like when that pitcher makes a mistake, it's got to be over. And that's where a lot of those guys do their work, is before that.
There was this kid, Brandon Wood. He was first rounder by the Angels in like 2000. And his year in high A, he had 58 jacks.
Really?
Yeah. So between high A and triple A. Went high A, sent him up and hit like 10 more, at like 48 and then 10. And so I played with him that year, and then played with him next year in Double A. We had an okay year in Double A, but it was like, you know, maybe like 19. Like,
which is awesome.
No, it's still a really good year, and he was a high school kid, so he was still only like 20 years old. Like, I mean, it was impressive. But like all the coordinators, all the hitting coaches were like, oh man, something's wrong. He's different. And like I remember sitting there talking to the hitting coordinator one day, and I was like, dude, nothing has changed. Like his swing hasn't changed. He doesn't do anything different. He's just falling off the 0-0 pitch that he was hitting out last year. And it's like, you guys are searching and in his head, having him do things differently. Like, just let him be, and like, let him go back to attacking. And it, I mean, he ended up making big leagues for a little bit, but like, I think had they like just let him flow, like, been better. Let's just get him time to hit that pitch you're missing. Like, I think we'd be talking about him today still.
Yeah, I've heard stories about him in the minor leagues. He was like the best player anyone had ever seen.
He was incredible. I mean, he was a shortstop. He's like 6'4", like super lanky. Like, I mean, it was the most incredible thing. It was like every single game. Like, all right, when's it happening today? Oh, bang. And it was, it was incredible. But I think that was my biggest takeaway. Like, he did not miss the pitches he should hit. And then the next year, he was missing them. He was fouling them off. Or,
And I think the crazy thing, too, is there's a video, I think Driveline actually put it out, it was about Ohtani. Not his strikeout, but his whiff rate is one of the highest in the big leagues. So, like, I think it's swing and miss 33% of the time. They were just talking about, like, why and stuff like that. It's just because his approach, I haven't heard him talk about it, but, like, you can just kind of tell, like, how he's swinging. Like, he sits sides of the plate. And so if he's sitting, like, middle in and it's a, you know, left-on-left slider, like, he will miss it by a lot. And for him, I think the mindset that I like with that is just, like, he's okay looking bad. And I think that's the main thing with hitting is I think sometimes, like, you get into – because it's so – it's and probably you can talk about this more just because, like, you know, you're still living it. But, like, you have these, like, 0 for 10 and you've punched out, like, five times and you're sitting there and you're like, I can't – I just don't even know what's going on. This is the worst thing in the entire world. And it's easy in theory to be like, yeah, it's fine looking bad. Like, the pitcher's going to win 70% of the time if you're a Hall of Famer. Yeah. But it's like you just fail so much and you get into these ruts where you're just like, I just don't know what's going on. You could tell me this is a fastball down the middle and I'm not going to get it. And then you see guys like Ohtani where it's like, man, if he's swinging and missing one out of three times and he's doing just fine, like what makes, like what's separating him? And I think he's got crazier tools than everybody else, but part of it too is just the confidence and then him being like, it's fine. Like I'm going to look bad. And if I don't like to say guessing, but like if he's hunting and the pitch is just a nasty slider, because guys throw that in the big leagues, like they throw nasty sliders that look like fastballs yep. out of the hand. And if you swing and miss, like he's okay with it. Yep. Like it's okay. It'll be okay. I get two more of these. So yeah.
Yeah. And I definitely think my best years, I've really dominated the fastball. And I think that I've spent a lot of time, obviously with you, like trying to get a little bit better at the breaking ball. But when I start playing again, you have to stick to your strengths. You can't cover everything. And you've got to hope that the training that you've done in the offseason makes you just a little bit better against off-speed. So, like,
yeah.
We hit a ton of off-speed off the machine, right? But I'm still a fastball hitter, and mm-hmm. I'm going to be looking for fastballs. So I think what you're trying to say is, like, you can't cover everything. And when you try to start covering your weakness, you'll get a fastball right down the middle. And it's like, that's the one that I've made a career on, and I just took it trying to hit the one that's kind of held me back. So it's like,
yeah,
the toss up is, yeah, it's difficult to deal with.
Yeah. And it's like on the pitching side, my buddy's, he's a head coach now. He's a pitching coach for a long time. He goes, you make this mistake as a pitching coach when you're in college, because most of the time you're calling the pitches and you see the scout report, like this guy's a bad changeup hitter. And so you call it changeup, but the guy on the mound that you have has a terrible changeup. Well, guess what hitters can do? Hit shitty changeups. So, yeah. So that's where it's like, it kind of gets into it where what you're saying is like you stick to your strength and then you're hoping like, hey, if I'm punching out at like, just pull random, I'm punch out at 25% rate, which isn't that bad. It's like, man, if I work on this, you know, all off season, over the course of the year, I might get down to like 22. And that sounds like not that big of a deal, but it is a big deal. And that may make your batting average like 270 to 275. And it might have add a couple extra home runs, add a couple extra doubles. And like over the course of time, you're like, man, I hit 22 home runs this year. I hit 25 doubles. I hit 275. And it's like you did all that work every day for that little bit. But if you start only focusing on your weakness and then you're like, now I'm going to hunt, you know, sliders, it's like, well, there's not a lot of fruit there.
Yeah.
And that's where you get in trouble. So, but yeah.
That's why it's such a hard game.
It's such a hard game. Yeah. Such a hard game. But
I feel like it's gambling when you're playing roulette. And you're like, all right, I'm going to go black. And it goes red. Like, all right, now I'm going to go red. And it goes black.
Yeah.
Like, that's what you're chasing the
right.
The loss as opposed to like just sticking with your...
Staying on black.
Yeah. Actually, Bob, we can ask you this as a pitcher and a pitching guy. Like, we won't say the player, but he was talking the other day about there's a guy that he was talking about how... you know, fastballs, it's about like quality of contact. And when you see the bad breaking ball, that's where you attack and you try to hit the home. And so like on the pitching end, how do you feel about that? Are those the guys that are hard to handle where it's just like, hey, they're going to, I don't want to say like play pepper with my fastball, but they're trying to put good concerned swings. And then when they see the bad one, let's go attack it. Yeah.
Like, I mean, the guys that are selling out to like
hit
the home run, I feel like I get out 100 out of 100.
You know, on the fastball. Yeah.
And it's like those guys that like can cover the plate and like, they're going to put good barrel on it versus like just trying to hit a home run.
Yeah.
Those guys are tough to attack.
And I thought that was I've been thinking about that the last couple of days because that's really what you want. You want good controlled swings on the fastball because like that's where you want to be consistent. Like we were talking about, you want to be a good consistent fastball hitter. And then when you get the bad breaking balls up in the zone or the ones that are just spinning, right? those are the ones where you should do your damage, like where you hit the home runs, where you hit the ones off the wall. And that's really what we've been talking about.
Yeah, and I think it comes back to velocity. Like, slug on fastballs, 96 plus, is not high, which is why, like, it's such an advantage and is why everyone is trying to get these guys to throw hard, because slug on 95 plus is not hard. I mean, not high, sorry. Yeah. But when you start getting below that, or you like slug on sliders is high in comparison to that. So I think if you look at big league averages, people selling out for fastballs to hit it out, it might happen once in a while, but it's not a very good game to get into.
Yeah, that's why I tell the college guys, like, hey, we love doubles, okay? And we like home runs, we like singles, because I think a lot of times, especially guys, the worst part is when guys have just enough juice to like get themselves in trouble. They'll have a year where they hit like 7 or 8 home runs, and they're like, this is who I am. And then they have a bad year the next year. And so it's like, and we've talked about this. Can we hit 30 doubles this year? Like, that's the main thing. Can we hit 30 doubles? Because if you hit 30 doubles, you're going to hit 20 home runs.
I mean, I'll relate that to like a guy throwing a really good slider in the zone and getting a swing and miss. And then he's like, that was really good. Make it nastier.
Yeah.
And then exactly. They try to make it nastier and throw it like 4 feet outside.
Yeah.
How did that just.
Or they get a new pitch. They're like, I'm a cutter guy now.
Yeah.
And it's like, no, you're not. You're not a cutter guy now. You're just throwing that every once in a while to get
added it to your repertoire.
So, but yeah, I think that's, you know, those are all good points. And then like last year, you were down in Mexico, and we've talked a lot about the international game. So like, how was Mexico compared to, you know, minor league ball? That league's gotten a lot better. We were talking about the other day, like there's guys with like legit big league careers that are getting released in Mexico now. Yep. So we talked about that.
Yeah, Mexico was definitely an experience. It's funny, and I'm sure you guys have probably heard Frank say, like, the league and the games are super intense. But in terms of like baseball knowledge, I feel like they're like 10 years behind. Value stuff that has been thrown out of the American game, like, all they care about offensively is batting average. Like, are you hitting 300? A guy hitting 310 with a 690 OPS, which is tough to do, but like someone like that rather than a guy hitting 240 with an 850. Yeah. And so it's like, it was tough to go there for me and stomach that in a way, because it's just the culture. It's just like what they value. And I did enjoy my time in Mexico. I played 40 games. I got traded 3 times. so it's a bit, I played for 5 different GMs and 4 managers in 40 games.
Yeah. So you said it's kind of a crazy.
So like in Mexico, and you guys might've heard Frank talk about this, like if you lose 3 games in a row, someone's getting fired, whether it's the manager, players.
No overreactions.
Yeah. Frank said they brought in a priest to like get all the bad spirits out. Yeah. That was the team that you were on, right? Frank said it was after he got traded first day. He walked in and there was like a priest throwing water around. He's like, what is happening right now?
But I'm definitely appreciative to the Mexican League because they've introduced, I think, 17 or 20 imports. And so it gives like guys, I would say it's like AAA 2.0, where it's guys that are probably too good for AA. I'm trying to get back to AAA or the big leagues. So it's a good level of baseball, but yeah, the different culture in Mexico is definitely an experience.
So, but yeah, I mean, then kind of what you're going on in the future, obviously, like you're working to get picked back up in an organization. I know you've talked to a bunch of them and just kind of, you know, waiting for your opportunity there. And then I think the cool part is with international baseball, like you're excited for the World Baseball, because that's next year, correct?
Yeah, next March.
Yeah, next March. And then the Olympics is in a couple years. And so maybe you can talk a little bit about, because you're pretty fired up about the younger Australian guys coming up and the team that you're going to have. And just, you know, last year you were kind of had a hero moment against South Korea where you hit the home run to put you guys up late in the game and then get into the knockout round, and how big of a deal that is for Australia, because, you know, baseball is really big in the Latin countries, really big in the Asian countries, and you guys are kind of getting on the map now. So talk about that team and the construct of it and everything.
Yeah, baseball in Australia is growing like really big. I think if you look throughout the college system, there's a bunch of Australians, like the KU shortstop is Australian, for example, or the Travis Bazzano was the number 1 pick last year. So that, like, for Australian baseball, that was just huge in terms of guy. Like, our World Baseball Classic roster this March will be the best by far that we've ever had, to the point where it's like some really good players are going to get pushed out of the team. You talk about like guys like Liam Hendricks, who has been probably the most successful Australian player. He'll be playing in it. So
Australian baseball is definitely on the up and up. Kids are getting way more opportunities. Now it's not so unforeseen for kids to go Division One straight away. There's a lot more resources being put into it, being put into helping them get recruited. So yeah, it's growing. And the next like 5-10 years, I'm hoping it turns into a really good pipeline.
Yeah, and even Bob was asking me before this. He's like, isn't that that kid from Arkansas, Australia? And I was like,
Brent Iredale, he's dominating as well. So
yeah,
I'm hoping he's a first rounder this year. So like we, Australians.
On pace too. Like,
yeah. I don't know him personally. I've been watching from afar, but he's done it all himself too. He went to a junior college in New Mexico. He was kind of overlooked as a junior, got physical, and now he's at Arkansas. And he's just killing. So yeah, he should be on our WBC team. So yeah, it's looking really good.
Yeah, yeah, you got it. And then you've been off season, you know, you said one thing teams wanted to see was if you could play the outfield. Mm-hmm. So you played a lot of outfield last winter, and that's something that you're kind of adding to the tool belt. And so you've got some flexibility on that roster now. You said like I hit third on the national team. And so now you can kind of like move around outside the infield as well, which will make the team, you know, better, especially with guys like Bizana coming up. Because is he playing second? Is that what he's playing?
Yeah, he's still playing second. Okay. Yeah. So I think there was talk about him moving to center field, but for right now, I think he's still playing second. Yeah. You got Curtis Meade.
Yeah.
Who's on the opening day roster for the Rays. So he'll play third. You got Iredale that plays third.
Yeah, like, I mean, Curtis just had an insane spring training. And hey, ironically, he lives right next to Jeff Passan, so that was kind of fun.
Oh,
he was like, I saw Jeff Passan was on your podcast. He's my neighbor. I was like, oh, really?
Two houses down.
Yeah.
But yeah, he's a good guy.
Yeah.
But no, in terms of Australia, we're super excited. We should have a really good team, hopefully build off what we did last World Baseball Classic.
And then what pitchers, what are kind of the bigger names besides the
Lewis Thorpe was a pitcher. I think he pitched for the Monarch a couple years ago, but he's a major leaguer with the Twins. In Australia, there's these kids, Lachlan and Alex Wells, and we call them the Wells brothers. They're really good. Liam Hendricks will probably be our closer, which is a good, you know, get a lead, and he's got some experience. Brandon Bidwire is another name who is in the Pittsburgh system. He's been throwing it well. Hopefully we can get Hendrickson back. He's been throwing the ball well. So yeah, we're looking to have like a really well-rounded team. There's a lot of pitchers in Australia that pitch in the league over there that have had experience that know how to get out. So
that's awesome. We usually, you know, Bob, do you have anything else you want to kind of ask about the international game or
no hitting? I think my spiders question earlier.
Yeah, yes. Spiders. Yeah, what are some of the crazy things that if guys travel to Australia that you're going to see?
So this is like a very misrepresented, misunderstood thing about Australia is that you're going to go get eaten by spiders and snakes. I would compare it to if you go into the Florida Everglades, you're going to see some big snakes and stuff, but you've got to go out of your way to see these things.
So you're not going to go to the beach and like get destroyed by like a jellyfish or a shark right away.
Well,
you might.
Sharks is another thing. But in terms of spiders, like you'd really have to go out of your way to see the big stuff.
Okay.
But
that's good.
Similar to you. I mean, if you go anywhere, there's going to be some stuff.
So we usually end with something fun. So one thing I was going to ask you, because I feel like you're a good clubhouse guy just by your demeanor and stuff. So who are some of the teammates where it's like post game you're going to go grab dinner, grab a beer? Who are some of the guys like that you've played with that you want? Maybe like four or five guys that you would choose to go have a good night.
Geez, in my career that I played with.
Could be anything. It'd be the Australian team. It could be minor leagues, college.
I got to think about
that. And does Frank not make
the yeah. war?
No, me and Frank would go after every game.
That's what he said.
Yeah, Frank would be on there. Tim, so I had my wedding here.
Yeah.
And my groomsmen were obviously my brother who doesn't play, but Tim Canelli, who's the captain of Team Australia. I mean, he's from my hometown. He'd be coming with me. Curtis Meade was a groomsman. And then Aaron Whitefield, who's another Australian big leaguer. Those would be my guys that I'd go grab a beer with.
Okay.
Yeah,
that's awesome.
I keep it Australian. I'm kind of.
Yeah.
And then
yeah.
Frank in that circle.
Yeah, yeah. Frank. Yeah, Frank's
there. Frank. Is this because you guys want to poke fun at him? Yeah.
Frank can start an argument with a take. What did you say the other day? Mike Trout was over.
Yeah, Mike Trout's over because he gets hurt. I was like, well, that's a separate.
I think we need to end right there.
that was a wild one. I was like, Frank, I don't know if that's a good take. If he plays like 110 games, he's probably going to hit 35 home runs.
Yeah.
He's pretty good at baseball.
Yeah, for a long time.
Yeah, for a really, really long time. And then the last thing I was to bring up, he was telling me, just to give kind of like more of an idea about international baseball, he said he switched Australian teams and they wrote like a thing in the newspaper and had him in black and white like he was a villain because he like switched from the hometown team to the other team.
So. Yeah, it was an article. It was an article on the internet. A can of worms. Yeah, so I grew up. So the way you grow up is like the Australian baseball league teams do all the junior development teams. So I would come up through that, and then I eventually played for the Perth Heat.
Yeah.
An opportunity came where Peter Moylan, who is a really successful Australian big leaguer, was the manager in Melbourne, which is like the equivalent of Los Angeles to Florida. So I went with him and played for him in Melbourne.
Yeah.
Perth, the owners of Perth weren't like super happy about it at first, but that's all water under the bridge now.
That's good. But I think it's good for people to know like how serious like in these other countries baseball is treated. Because like I feel like here the expectation is trades, guys move teams and stuff like that. And like even when we were growing up, or I say like me, like those Yankees and Red Sox teams like hated each other. It was like when Johnny Damon flipped from the Red Sox to the Yankees, everybody was like, how is this even possible? Like, how is he doing this? And I just think that was like, it just reminded me of that where it's like, you know, these teams, it's more about following individual players, I think now, or like, you know what I mean? And that, and you saw that with like the Luka Doncic trade. Like there's so many people that, you know, freaked out about that, but it's more like those Dallas fans are like Luka Doncic fans, less like Mavericks now. And so it just reminded me of that, like when we were growing up, where it's like the Yankees and the Red Sox would play on Sunday Night Baseball, and it's like, hey, I got to make time to watch the 7 p.m. game because somebody might get in a fight and it's going to be awesome. And Pedro's throwing and somebody hits home run, so he throws at the next guy's neck, you know? And
I feel like baseball has done the best job at keeping that loyalty. Like, imagine if Aaron Judge got traded to the Red Sox. The NBA, I feel like, is just a
It's more of like individual players. I think in football, it's a little bit like that too, because of fantasy football.
Yeah.
So like, I'll watch the Panthers and be like, man, I really need Adam Thielen to get 3 catches today. You know. So it's like, you know, you get a little bit of that with fantasy football, and I think baseball, it's still that like local, like I am a Cardinals fan, I am a Royals fan, I'm a Dodgers fan, you know, whatever. And so that's kind of nice, and it sounds like that's kind of how it is in Australia. It's like whatever town you're in, like that's
you usually play for them.
Yeah, that's cool. But yeah, I think that's all we got. Robbie, you got anything else?
No, thank you guys for having me. Thanks for letting me work out here.
Yeah, man, thanks for coming on, man.
I found you guys like 5 years
ago. We tried to stay hidden.
He was like, I didn't know hitters came here. And I was like, well, it's kind of new.
Like, minutes from my house.
He was like, I've been driving down to the River Market like 30 minutes out of my way for the last 5 years. But yeah, we appreciate it, dude. Good luck this year. It's going to be a lot of fun watching you. It's been a pleasure working with you.
Yeah.
All right.
Thanks for listening. Tune in again next week and like and subscribe.